the Indiana School of the Sky Science Series. Great Days in Science, the story of man's mastery of his own mind.
Welcome to another program in Great Days in Science, the Indiana School of the Sky Science Series, broadcast each week at this time to classrooms and home listeners everywhere by Indiana University, with the cooperation of the Indiana State Department of Education and this radio station.
For centuries, man had searched for an answer to the question, where did different varieties of plants and animals come from? Today, we tell the story of a scientist who found an answer to that question, Charles Darwin.
The date is April 26th, the year 1882. The place? Westminster Abbey in London. Charles Robert Darwin, author of the greatest scientific theory of the 19th century, now lies in state among the other great men of England. Hundreds of people from Europe and America have come here to honor him. The procession is over, and most of the crowd has moved out of the great portal into the sunlight. All but a few. A few friends of Darwin. There's Thomas Huxley and Alfred Russel Wallace, fellow scientists as well as friends of Darwin, and, oh yes, Francis Darwin, son of the great scientist.
I hardly know what to say, gentlemen, but for myself and the rest of the family, thank you. My father would have been...
Yes, of course. We understand, Francis.
But you must be tired, Mr. Huxley.
It has been a long ordeal, Francis.
Well, I tell you what. Let's stop here in the anteroom.
Good idea, Wallace. Better. Much better.
Yes, indeed.
How Charles would have hooted at this pomp and circumstance. Procession, organ music, Westminster Abbey.
That's all right for royalty, he would have said. For kings, but not for a microscope man like me.
Why, that's Father. That's him almost exactly. But I know one thing that would have pleased him. The people that came. It would have proved that at least some didn't hate him.
That long, long wrangle over his theory.
And that's where you were the greatest help to him, Huxley. He wouldn't have raised his voice. Always said his book would have to stand on its own feet.
The trouble is that most of his critics never even read the books.
Well, it's over now.
Oh, no, Francis. Not over. This is only the beginning. The beginning of a new advance in biology. Here in England, in America, on the continent, scientists are taking heart and working for new facts in biology, new understandings of life and growth. But that's beginning to sound like those old debates with Bishop Wilberforce.
Fitzroy.
What?
I said Fitzroy. I was thinking of how it all began.
Fitzroy? Oh, of course. Captain of the Beagle.
The father almost didn't sail on the Beagle, you know. Grandfather Darwin refused to allow it. 5 years, he said, was too long for a young man to be gone from home.
With no idea that those 5 years with the Beagle would become the source of his great theory.
Oh, but those years did prove one thing, that he had to be a scientist. And that Captain Fitzroy had a temper like quicksilver. I remember Father telling me about Captain Fitzroy.
Mr. Darwin, as master of this ship and this expedition, I forbid you to trouble the crew with your research.
Oh, but Captain Fitzroy,
asking them to catch fish for you, bringing you barnacles and scrapings of coral.
I never asked them to neglect their duty.
But they do neglect them. And another thing, your notebooks. You can keep them out of my way from now on. They get confused with my papers.
Yes, sir. But our quarters are
safe. Our quarters? My quarters, Mr. Darwin. My quarters. Charles, the ship's doctor tells me your digestive trouble's getting no better.
No, sir.
Well, you gotta rest more.
Well, I will, sir, but, oh, there's so much to do, so many specimens to catalog. Oh, let me tell you about something I found. It troubles
Well,
me.
I've got to work on the law.
Oh, no, wait, please.
All right.
I found that animals and plants on the east coast of South America are the same in general as those in the Galapagos Islands, but not exactly the same. There are differences. And it's these differences that trouble me. Why should they generally be the same and, at the same time, different?
Because they live in different places, I suppose.
Oh, but don't you see, sir? Why should a difference of place bring a difference of form?
How should I know?
Well, then there's this, even more puzzling. The remains of plants and animals in the rocks, fossils, are always similar in form to the plants and animals now living. I want to know why.
Yes, no doubt you do. That's very interesting, very interesting. Now, look, you get some rest before your questions flatten you out entirely.
Yes,
and
sir.
Don't try to turn my crew into a bunch of blasted yes. scientists.
Yes, sir.
And I'm not joking about this, Darwin.
No, sir, I understand, sir.
So that's how Father used those 5 years on the Beagle. In 1836, he was back home in England. I suppose it was Mother as much as anyone else who kept his strength up and made it possible for him to turn out all that massive work, research problems, books, and several articles for scientific journals. One day, Charles Lyell...
Lyell's discoveries in geology.
Are almost as great as your father's in biology.
Indeed.
Well, Father
indeed.
Always said Lyell's work was one of the rocks upon which he based his own work. And Father never forgot the help that Lyell gave him while he was working on The Origin of Species. It was in 1840, or 41, I believe, that Father was 35 years old then. And Father was saying to Lyell...
So, Lyell, you see where my discoveries on the Beagle have led me? To this, that all living things have been undergoing change through the long ages of history, and that they are still undergoing change.
Yes, yes, Charles, I see all that, but how do you explain the changes? Jean Lamarck, the Frenchman, came to the same conclusions long ago.
Well, it's hard to put it briefly, but it comes down to this. Every living thing reproduces itself, but not exactly. There is always some difference in form. Now, those forms that are weak or badly adjusted to their surroundings die out. But those that survive tend to pass on to their offspring the forms that make life possible. So, little by little, what was only a small difference becomes the form that is passed on and on from parent to offspring.
But what about the differences in those forms? They don't stop, do they?
No, of course not. The process goes on and on even now, though our own lifetime are too short for us to notice the differences and the changes.
Well, then, Charles, you could argue that all the thousands of different forms in the world today have descended through a long process of change from the same source.
Now, that's my point exactly. And I call that process of change natural selection.
Natural selection. Charles, you must write this up in a book.
I've already begun.
And you must prove it, Charles. You know that.
Yes, I know, and that's what troubles me. Do I have enough evidence? For 15 years, I've been arranging my findings, gathering more facts from reading, experiments, field work. But is it enough to convince the skeptical ones?
I wouldn't know, Charles, but if the idea is ever to be expressed in words, you're the man to do it.
I wish I could be
Charles,
sure.
Charles, it's time for you to rest now.
Oh, yes, Emma, I didn't see you come in. If you know my wife, Lyell, that's an order.
You'll excuse us, I know, Mr. Lyell.
Certainly.
But there'll be no books of any kind if Charles doesn't watch his health.
I understand, Mrs. Darwin. I'll see you again, my friends. We can't let our man get sick. Well, good day to you both.
Goodbye.
That was very nice to
So Father began to write, still troubled by doubts. It was Mother to whom he turned for comfort.
Emma, do you think I dare publish my theory?
Charles, I've told you.
I mean, ever. Will the people ever accept something so foreign, so new to them?
There have been revolutions in science before, Charles. If you have uncovered the truth, it's your duty to make it known. Oh, surely they realize that all you're doing is giving them a different interpretation of creation. your interpretation. Really, this doesn't sound like the scientist talking, Charles.
It isn't. It's a man with a responsibility and a conscience. I'm confused, Emma. I don't know what to do.
You'll do what you think best. You always have. I shall leave you alone for a while.
Thank you. I just want to think.
I understand. I'll be in my room if you need me.
Confused, doubtful. It wasn't until you sent your paper, Wallace, that he overcame his doubts.
How well I remember. But my paper on the forms of life was only an outline. My few observations were as nothing compared to the thousands of facts your father had gathered and organized.
Oh, but don't you see? Father was pleased. His theory was shared by someone else.
Yes, yes, he sent me the manuscript, wanted my opinion. Oh, I remember that well. I met him in the study at Down.
Well, what do you think, Thomas?
Charles, I think this is the greatest single contribution to science that the world has ever known.
Then you think it's true?
Every word of it.
But dare I publish it? Dare I suggest that living things, man included, Huxley, that living things have developed from simpler forms long ago? If there'll be a fight, I have no wish to fight, Thomas.
There'll be defenders to fight for you, Charles. Lyell and Hooker here. Asa Gray in America. They'll all stand by you. And I'll carry the book to every open mind in England. Charles, listen to me. There's bound to be some opposition. You know that.
Yes, I do know.
So what we've got to do is line up our forces now. Send letters to all important men of science everywhere. Tell them that Charles Darwin is publishing his theory on the evolution of living things, of man. If they want to see truth prevail, they'll get ready to fight for it. Tell them, and they will fight for it.
So at last the book was published on November 24th, 1859.
The Origin of Species
by Means of Natural Selection. What a storm it raised. And poor Charles, for all his greatness of mind, he couldn't cope with it.
And you defended him, Huxley, and you too, Wallace.
What else could we do?
Well, you could have turned against him as others did.
Like Bishop Wilberforce. Darwin is a raving maniac with the brain of the ape from which he claims to have descended.
Wilberforce.
In the end, though, Father's theory stood the test, and now it's accepted by serious men of science everywhere.
He lies here in Westminster Abbey among the honored great.
Are you rested now, Huxley?
Oh, yes, yes, perfectly.
Wallace?
Ready?
Ready.
Shall we go then?
Oh, yes,
of course. Yes, of course. Let's be
on. April 26th, 1882. Charles Darwin placed in a niche of his own in Westminster Abbey. His books, The Origin of Species and Descent of Man, continued to work in the minds of scientific men, and works even today toward a sharper understanding of living things, of plants and animals and men, of life and growth and change.
I've been listening to another program from Great Days in Science, the Indiana School of the Sky Science Series. The script was written by George C. Johnson, Director of Educational Radio Programs at Indiana University. In the cast were Bob Vesey, Richard Morgan, Lamar Krask, John Taylor, Charles Veer, Dovey Gleason, and Julius Miller. Sound and music by Jack Mickey. The program was directed by Fred L. Gerber.
Next week, scientists follow Newton. This series is produced by the Radio Department of Indiana University and reaches you through the cooperation of the Indiana State Department of Education and this radio station.